And mainly, my big obstacle is getting more clients and finding where they are, and you know, sort of putting myself out there.
What is a music supervisor?
A music supervisor is someone who finds and licenses music for like TV shows and commercials and films and stuff. In a nutshell.
My name is Patty, and I have a few different businesses, but the one that I was thinking of when I came here was the music business. I make CDs, and I'd like to know how to promote it.
Yeah. So you're actually a musician yourself, yeah. And you want to, okay, gotcha.
What kind of music do you do?
Traditional country stuff, mm-hmm. Yeah. And then my daughter is, she has R&B, and she's getting ready to make her first CD, so I just want to help her if I can, too.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Greg. I'm an actor and musician, so in the arts, and pretty terrible at business. So looking to just start thinking more aggressively about how to mm-hmm. treat my passion for this business.
Great.
I'm Melissa. I produce concerts and recently started designing jewelry, and I'd like to start my own music festival and open my own venue at some point, and somehow get the jewelry involved somewhere in there too.
Hi, I'm Eve. Currently, well, I'm a writer-director. I make independent films, and also have a dual. Another thing is holistic health counseling and therapy work, and kind of focusing on making films that have a spiritual humanitarian awareness, along with workshops and depending on what the focus is, mm-hmm. writing workshops and workbook related stuff for films.
Yeah. My name is Samuel. I was a teacher with LA Unified for 22 years, and I needed a change, so I created a couple of businesses to give me the courage to take early retirement. And my two businesses are I import sacred geometry pendants from India, and I taught sacred geometry in the school system, actually, under another name, Geometric Drawing and Math Art Connection, and in public. I've done it for 12 years. The other business I have is they're imported bottles and jars from Switzerland. They're purple, and they raise frequency and keep things fresher longer. It's Miron glass bottles and jars. And so those are two businesses that I have that generate income. And I also send out email blasts every day to about 750 people, pretty much on the west side of LA, focused on the area of consciousness and health. My body, spirit, holistic, culture, creative community. And I'm starting to charge for email blasts to some people. And that's some things I barter, and some things I just do favors. And then, like, some people I charge like $25 for an email blast. So that's generating a little income, too. But that's really mostly a labor of love. It's people I've met personally.
Yeah.
My name is Melissa.
Hi.
I make jewelry and art, and I really want to bring my business to the next level, because right now I'm working a few other jobs on top of that, and I just want to be able to just do that.
Mm-hmm.
Trace, glassblower, jeweler, and my focus for this year is to really get my web sales up. I'd really like to just be doing web sales instead of all these shows that I go to.
Just out of curiosity, how do the two compare? Like, do the shows bring in a lot of percentage of your sales, or not much, or?
Yeah.
A lot?
Nearly all my sales are my shows right now, but I'd like to switch it to the other
mm-hmm.
way. But for Christmas, I do quite well on the web, but mm-hmm. not that well during the year.
Gotcha.
I do shows also.
Oh, cool.
Holistic shows. Yeah.
So I want to do a break about halfway through, because 3 hours is kind of a long time to go at one shot. So if anyone needs to make a call or, you know, whatever, there will be a break halfway. And it's great to have lots of interaction. There will be lots of good ideas going on. But I think just two things about that. One is you only need to share what you're comfortable with. So even if I actually ask you a question, I'll try not to put anyone on the spot, but if I do, please feel free to deflect that and don't feel obligated. And we might want to raise hands just to keep everyone from talking at once, and I'll try and recognize you as soon as and get to your question as soon as possible, and there'll be time for questions at the end. So go ahead and, you know, you can raise your hand during, and then when it gets to a good spot, we can do questions, and but we can also do them at the end. And then I just wanted to mention one thing, too. Part of being in business is sales, and I used to hate sales, personally. I would have rather had, like, dental work than done sales. And I'm actually beginning to warm up to it a little because I've had some training over the last year, and I've connected with people that do, like, really conscious, sort of high-integrity, service-oriented sales, and there's, like, kind of a whole new philosophy about it. So when I talk about sales, and even if I use terms that might sound kind of harsh on the outside, like close the deal or something, it's always with that service orientation. It's never about manipulating anyone or pressuring anyone. It's always with that idea of if someone would benefit from having your product and the two of you would benefit from the transaction, that we make it easy for them to say yes. So, okay, the goals and plan for tonight. When I was thinking about what to cover for tonight, I was trying to think of things that would be useful for everyone, no matter what business they had. So I started to think to myself, like, what was the most useful thing about business school? And I think the most valuable thing was to actually learn to think about a business and to be able to take that top-level view and kind of create a direction and a strategy. And there's a lot of things that you can get, like certain skill sets, or like if you need to learn bookkeeping, or you know, even like to do a website, you can learn that if you know you need to. But something like this, it's a little more nebulous, and it's hard to even know that you need it. And it's kind of not publicized. When you start your business, it's like, oh, just print a few business cards, get a website, and the business will kind of take care of itself, and maybe you'll do some paperwork from time to time, but that's about it. And that's really not true. You need to be spending a lot of time on the business and sort of being the director. So tonight's goal is to give you the language and the skills and the process for thinking strategically about your business, and you know, the idea of taking it, what would be the next level, or what would be your next expansion, and how to make that happen. And tonight is going to be really focused on creating information for you to use in your business. And it's not to be confused with stuff you might use in your marketing materials or with a banker or something like that. It's very focused for what, for this purpose, which is to help you think about your business. It might help you write your marketing materials, but that's not the main thrust of it. So there's two key phrases I use for strategic thinking, and we're going to be weaving them throughout everything tonight, so I want to start by introducing those. And the first one is, what else? And that's whatever you're doing, to always be asking, what else could I do with this? How else could I use what I'm doing right here? You know, it's like, you know, when you make like pasta for dinner and it takes like 10% more effort to make double the pasta and you get double the meals out of it. Like, that's kind of the logic to apply. It's like, I'm doing this thing. What else can I do with what I'm already doing? So if you have materials, what else could you do with those materials? If you have a certain skill set, what else could you do with that skill set? What else could you do with your customer base? What else might they be interested in? Your tools, your space, anything you do. Like if you go to an event, what else could you do while you're there? You know, you got to kind of get your game face on, and maybe you put like a nice outfit on or set up your displays and that kind of thing. So like, what else can you do while you're there? So that's the magic phrase number one, is what else. My second magic phrase is so that. And that is to create some focus on the purpose of what you're doing. So you always want to know the so that. You know, I hosted a local tweet up, which was a gathering around using social media, and people would always say, oh, yeah, you got to be on Twitter, you got to be on Facebook. And I'd always say, well, not so fast. Like, why? Always know why you're doing things, and don't just do anything until you know why you're doing it. Like, even a website. Your website should have a purpose to it. Like, is it to collect names for a newsletter? Is it to create sales from your website? Is it to put people in seats at a show? Like, what's the purpose of your website? And I know a lot of you guys know each other and see each other regularly, and that's why I wanted to sort of throw these phrases out there too, because you can use them with each other. Like when someone says, oh, I'm going to be putting this new thing on my website, you can say, well, you know, what's the so that? Why are you doing that? The next thing I want to talk about is to create a mindset shift for how you think about your business. it's so easy. There's so much to do when you're a solopreneur, like even if you have assistants or people that work with you, it's easy to get caught up in the task work of the constant running on the hamster wheel just to keep up and get it all done, that it's hard to ever take a step back and kind of look at the business overall, but it's really important to do that. And as sort of an example, like you can picture a restaurant, and when you go into a restaurant, there's people that do the actual tasks that keep the place running. They cook the food, they serve the food, they chop the vegetables, they clean the dishes, they seat people, pour drinks, answer phone, like they're doing that very task-oriented work. Now, if we go up a level, there's a manager who's kind of directing all that. The manager says, okay, well, your station is over here, and you're going to be the busboy tonight, and that kind of thing. And then ideally, even over that person, there is an owner or an executive chef or someone who is really looking at the vision for the place. You know, this is the person that says, well, this is going to be a 5-star French restaurant, so the waiters are going to wear tuxedos. Or, you know, this is going to be a burger and beer joint, and we're going to have peanut shells on the floor. It's like very different visions. And someone needs to be directing that so that you don't end up with peanut shells and tuxedoed waiters. It just kind of wouldn't work, you know. And it's important in your own business to spend time kind of at all three levels. Like one is the actual task work that needs to happen to make the business run. And then the middle level would be kind of the scheduling and where are you going to be when. And if you've got a show coming up, what do you need to do to lead up to that and be ready for it and that kind of thing. And then even at that higher level, it's like, what's the mission of your business? How else can you put your product out there? What other markets are there? What else can you do with the things that you're already doing, like that type of visionary thinking? And you don't need to spend a lot of time on this, but just some from time to time so that you kind of keep your finger on the pulse of things. And it's really, it's more than just a language shift. It's really a way to sort of identify when you're working, which of these modes you're in. Like, are you in the sort of task and mode? Are you in the management mode? Are you in the CEO and visionary mode? And this also helps set you up for hiring someone later. If you ever wanted to hire someone to help you out, you kind of already have a good feel for what kind of help you need and what kind of things you're lacking so that you're not hiring someone blindly. And I think that's always really important, that even when you do hire people, that you have enough knowledge to make a good hire and to really direct the person toward what you need. So are there any questions at this point? Okay, so the next two things are the real sort of strategic things I want to get into, and it's the business model and the business plan. So they're kind of two things that overlap, and sometimes when people talk about them in conversation, they might be even used interchangeably, but I'm going to use them differently for tonight. And again, tonight's purpose is about creating information and tools for you to use in managing your own business. So if you create a business plan tonight or the beginnings of one, and then later you go to a bank and they want something completely different, don't be surprised. It's just that the bank is looking at it with a really different purpose. You know, the bank is looking at it so that they know you can pay your loan back, whereas you're looking at it to how you can make this mission bigger and make more money and that kind of thing. And there's even other purposes you might do a business plan for, like a loan would be one. With a very specific focus. Bankers are very conservative and they want to see how you're going to pay back. If you ever went to like a venture capitalist, those people are might invest in 100 businesses and maybe 95 of them tank, but maybe 5 hit it huge, and that's how they make their money. So they're looking for big ideas, things that could just go massive. They're not necessarily looking for the same conservative thing, so that would be a totally different business plan. So my point is that there's no one way to do a business plan. There's not like a set in stone definition of what a business plan is. It really depends on what the purpose of that plan is that you're doing. It's the so that, what are you doing the plan for? That's going to drive how you do it. And even if you go to like the Small Business Administration, they have like a set format for it. So if you ever do one later and it turns out to be very different than tonight, that would be why. So, business model. Has anyone ever heard that term or know what it is? Anyone want to take a guess? No wrong answers. No. Okay, so your business model is what your business does to make money. And there's a couple of different, I'm just checking that my recording is still working here. Okay, good. There's a couple of different levels to look at that. The broad would be, I'm a pet sitter. I sell jewelry. I'm a realtor, something like that. So it's like sort of a very broad definition of what you do. Now, a few people mentioned that they either don't have a business or have more than one, and I would encourage you to start with one with this process, and when you learn the process, you can go back and apply it to other parts of your business, but start with one for now. So can I get a few people to say, give just like a broad one-sentence definition of their business model? I guess we kind of did that already, but...
Selling CDs.
Selling CDs, okay. And maybe even... I make music and sell my own CDs. Only because if it's just selling CDs, you could be like a retailer of CDs.
Yeah.
Which, you know, which is fine. It might be something you do later, but it would just be a little different. Anybody else?
Provide a service that sells detergents and recyclable, renewable bottles.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. Okay. So does everyone kind of get that idea, that the broad, there's sort of a broad? And this also, I don't want to get this confused with, it sounds like we're talking about your elevator pitch, that you know, 10-second speech you have to be ready to give when someone says, what do you do? And this might help you do that, but we're not really working on getting the language polished. This is just kind of for your own purpose, so that you have a good, clear sense of what it is that you do. And you also might have different product lines within your business, you know, like, for example, in your case, you record your own music onto CDs and sell them, and then you might do that for your daughter or someone else at some point. So
right.
It's sort of like that.
Right, in my mind, it was like, you know,
right.
Is it for others,
mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah, so you have different product lines within the
yeah.
same thing, so that would be another, you know, way to look at it. So the broad is important, but what's really useful are some of the details, and I have, let's see, like, about 10 different ways that you can differentiate your broad business model. So the first thing might be, like, to whom do you sell? And everybody talks about and I think we talked about this, I don't know if it was the Q&A you were at, but we were talking about how sometimes demographics aren't always the most useful way to describe this. Like, if you sell jewelry, you could sell, you know, mostly to women, but you could also sell to men looking to buy a gift for someone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do you describe who buys detergents? I mean, it's probably mostly, well, people who do laundry, but who isn't that? So it's sort of like demographics might be useful, but there might be other more valuable ways to describe who you sell to. And the way this would work with your business model is it's going to drive some of the things about how you promote your business. Like when I was in college, I had a friend who paid his way through graduate school catering intimate dinner parties. Somehow he got in with this group of like country club friends, and so they all started having him at their house to make these dinner parties. But it was very upscale. Everything was very like kind of fancy and gourmet, and it was paired with wine and that kind of thing. So that dictated everything. It dictated the menus he offered. It dictated how people showed up dressed with him and when they were working for him. It dictated how the meals were served and how he interacted with the guests. And it would be really different than someone who catered, say, like football parties, where it's, you know, wings and chips and that kind of thing. So it's important to have a sense of who you're selling to and what's important to them. And that will help drive some of the things like, you know, what your marketing materials look like, the language you use, how you sell. You know, like if the people you're selling to are mostly very elderly, then you might not be able to do a whole lot of sales on computers because sometimes they don't use computers. Okay, so the next one, any questions on that, on figure out who you sell to? No. The next one will be your price point. And there's a whole, you know, tons of information on pricing. And it's just one way you can further narrow down your product, like at you know, what's your price point. And it's not always good to sell at a bargain. You know, sometimes it can... change people's perception of value, and it's just something, you know, the best way to figure this out is to experiment with it, I think, to really see. Would you
mm-hmm. Yeah,
would you find that?
Yeah, and it depends where I am, what price I can sell at. You know, who the customer is
mm-hmm. sometimes. So some people are comfortable paying more for
yeah.
the same thing?
Some
yeah,
some like to pay more, you know.
That's interesting.
Feel it's more valuable, like you say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a perfect example, yeah. Okay, any pricing concerns, questions? No? Okay. Number three is, how is your product sold? And this is actually a really important component of your product. Like, for example, Tupperware parties. You know, they used to, you can get it at Tupperware anywhere now, but when Tupperware first came out, it was like that was the way to buy Tupperware. You went to a Tupperware party. Certain things are sold only through, like, direct sales. Like, there's some different, like, multi-level marketing type stuff. You could sell by the web, by brick and mortar, by shows, that kind of thing. But it's just a component of your product. I have a friend that sells jewelry from a company called Cookie Lee, and it's costume jewelry, but it's kind of a little, it's like in the $20 to $100 price range. But it's only sold through Cookie Lee reps. So you have to actually know someone or go to, you know, and then they have like, she has like wine and cheese parties at her house and that kind of thing. So it's kind of part of the product that you have to kind of buy it at these parties. Actually, I guess actually you could buy from a catalog too. So the fourth thing is, how is your product different from the competition? You know, lots of people do country music, but yours is going to be different because it's you. It's so individual, you know, so it's going to be different.
Yeah, so.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, your detergent is going to be different because it comes in recyclable bottles, and there'll probably be other sort of related things like the Earth Message and that kind of thing that are going to make it different than all the other 20 that are in the store. Yeah, hopefully. The fifth thing is, how is it delivered? And the best example I can think of this is, you know, Wolfgang Puck has like sort of, not super fancy restaurants, but he has kind of fancy restaurants all over. And they expanded into frozen food in the supermarket. So it's just a different delivery. And it's not quite the same product, but you can kind of experience Wolfgang Puck in your supermarket.
And that means packaging.
So yes.
Delivery,
yeah.
It means not only the how the consumer is receiving the product,
mm-hmm.
but how you're packaging.
Yeah. Yeah, if you could imagine like something kind of, you know, say you order something and it comes wrapped in like, you know, brown paper with like someone put like stamps on it or something, you know, like that would be like a really different experience than getting your box from Amazon.
Right.
Yeah. So definitely, that's a great point. Go ahead.
I just wanted to digress a moment. You talked about pricing.
Mm-hmm.
When I first started importing these pendants, I tried selling them for $60, and I didn't get a lot of response, and I experimented a lot with prices.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that at $40, if somebody liked it, they didn't hesitate.
Ah.
And that was the sweet spot.
That's interesting. So for a lot of products, there might be a point where people don't hesitate. You know, that's an interesting point. Has anyone else seen that, where there's like a certain point, like that you sell a lot more at 40, you have to?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah,
I think 40 is quite a magic number, actually.
Hmm.
It's not 100, and it's not, you know, not 20. It's just kind of easy to spend, but you feel like you're getting something,
yeah.
Something valuable.
Oh, I had the opposite. When I used to do boat lettering for yachts in Marina Del Rey, and I wasn't selling anything, and my stepfather is also a letterer. He says, you're asking too little, these are rich people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I raised the price. He told me, like, I had a job, like $150, he said, ask $300, and they were selling like crazy.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Yeah. Isn't that funny? Yeah, it's fascinating, it really is, you know, and until you experience that or kind of see someone experience it, it's kind of hard to believe, but it's
yeah.
true.
Yeah.
And especially, I guess that makes sense, too, if you're lettering yachts, you know,
yeah, and he said, I feel a little more arrogant.
Mm-hmm.
And it worked.
That's amazing. That's truly amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure, especially if you're an artist, people want you to, you know, have confidence in your work.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they always want to sometimes be told which piece suits them best by
mm-hmm.
you because, you know, you made it or whatever.
Yeah, and I will tell you, as a non-artist, I think that the sort of mystique that you all have as artists is really powerful because, like, I look at the stuff that people do as an artist, and I'm baffled by it. Like, it's amazing to me. It's like this magical black box process. It's like, how do you look at metal and stones and see that? It's like, it's mystical. It's like, you know, amazing. So I would definitely say,
yeah,
as someone, yeah.
buying that
mm-hmm.
as well as, you know, the piece.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's probably ways to capitalize on that within your business, that sort of awe that the rest of us have for that process.
Mm-hmm. Oh, there's another thing. When we do shows, my wife has been helping me lately, and she's very intuitive and psychic, and and she'll have the customer pick out three that they like, and then she'll do a reading for them based on the three and help them narrow it down to one. And by the time she's done with the reading, they'll feel so satisfied that it's really easy for them to make the purchase, like they've already gotten a free reading.
Mm-hmm. So that's interesting.
Well.
That's like along the lines of a few of these things, like sort of differentiating. It probably doesn't really, it might cost her something in energy, but it doesn't really cost any money to provide that. And then people get this personal experience. And I would imagine, too, that it probably really connects them with the product. Like, they probably walk into a party and be like, oh, my God, this lady gave me this reading, and it was so cool. Look at this neat thing, you know? It's, like, more than just a piece of jewelry to wear.
And if she wanted to, she could develop that into a business on the phone, you know, giving people readings, which she doesn't want to do.
Right.
She's a nurse, but...
But it's a neat way to sort of...
It's a great selling point. Once they've picked out the three and then they give a reading, how could they not? Like,
yes.
You know?
Excellent.
It's harder to, like, say...
Yeah, and it's a great example of, like, this sort of heart-centered, service-oriented selling. Like, you're not pressuring anyone. You're just kind of really creating an experience around the purchase, and they probably feel really good about it. So,
adding to the mystique.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What were you going to say?
Just chiming in on that and just thinking as we're going, it seems to me that regarding price and that if there's something that you're offering us a service that comes from from the heart, a personal sort of place, or an art, for example, there seems to be something about how you seem to value what you're putting out there by price, which I don't see so much. If there's a big chain place selling burgers, I'll go for the cheap one.
Mm-hmm.
But if I see someone selling some CD for $10 and someone selling their own CD for $5, I wonder about the one that's $5. I'm almost more tempted to go for the $10 one because of someone's own personal value that they put in. And there's some psychology to it all. That I think you can underprice your things sometimes, depending on what kind of service you offer or coaching. My dad was doing some coaching and there's some pro bonos, but he used to talk about how some coaches would kind of charge not enough, and people would wonder, well, maybe they're not that good because they don't value their own service that much. So I think it depends on what you're selling and who you're selling, you know, and who you expect to be buying. And
I think you make a great point, too, about the difference between, like, something like a burger or, like, if you go into, like, a Target where there's, like, you know, just shelf upon shelf of plastic things, you're going to get the cheapest one that meets your needs because it's just a mass-produced plastic thing. Mm-hmm. But if you're buying a service, or a piece of artwork or something that was handmade, then you kind of, you know, then that sort of question of, like, how is this person valuing it, I think, pops up more. So I think that's a really interesting distinction.
And also, if you have a value of your thing, and then you're somewhere or whatever, there's some situation that you want to sell it for less because you need to make a sale or whatever, then you may have a discount or a sale.
Yeah. That's a good point, too, is that, you know, if you set, like, a really good, solid price on something, you got room to, you can always go down, but you can't go up, so that's a good point, too, and, like, you can do a, you know, if it's a slow time of the year, you can do a sale, or, you know, if you sense that someone's on the edge, you can say, well, I can give you two for this much, those kinds of things, so that's good, too, to build yourself a little cushion, but you need a strong starting point for that.
Yeah, people love to get a deal, you know.
Yeah.
Love to get something for a bit less.
So any more comments on pricing? I think your comments are really interesting and valuable. And pricing is such a big thing. Okay.
Well, maybe one thing. Just the term perceived value is a good thing to think about.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean by like, can you elaborate on that?
It's the way you place a value on an object and it's perceived. Like if you talk about the crystal geyser water and just kind of explain how it's cold and refreshing and it'll nourish your body, then the perceived value kind of goes up and other than just saying it's a bottle of water, you know.
Gotcha. So we want to communicate things that would help the customer understand why it's priced the way it is?
Yeah, but also the pricing would be part of the perceived value, you know, because if you sell the bottle of water for $10, people are going to think it's more valuable.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. How would Yeah, I guess, like, how, what would be a good way, like, if we were to kind of create a rule around building perceived value, I guess it would be talking about, like, the benefits that it would provide. Like why is this bottle of water $3 versus, you know, tap, which is 2 cents? Something like that. You know, like, we have to explain that, you know, this is natural and it comes from a spring and it's pure and it's good.
Yeah.
You know, like, those types of things. So I guess, you know, what I'm trying to get to is to...
Well, even
yeah.
like your example of selling boat lettering for $300 and being arrogant, like, people are going to think it's better because you're
yeah.
arrogant and you're charging. Like, it doesn't
right.
even really have to do with describing the process. It's just perception.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I understand of it.
Yeah, no, it makes a lot of sense. It's just, I was just trying to kind of create a generalization around that, and I don't know if I can do that on the spot or not, but I think it's a great point. Like, is everyone seeing what she's saying about this idea of conveying the value, pricing it so that the price is in line with the customer's perceived value.
Right. Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
And
it goes
in, yeah,
the
presentation
mm-hmm.
as well.
Mm-hmm.
And in your case, the font you use would different types of font would apply to different
oh, yeah.
places.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm myself to be drawn, that's maybe just me, towards products that are also like a certain percentage, or they also stand for some good cause, which is also what I want to do with mine, if it's possible, if it's decide how feasible that is. But that's something I'm always drawn to, if there's like a percentage or some
mm-hmm.
amount goes to something I really believe in. And,
yeah.
You know, and if that's your target market anyway, then
that's
something yeah. I think that, at least with me, I can work. I don't know if that's...
Yeah, I think that's a good one.
Organic
okay.
thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah.
With that one, I would call that sort of like a defining characteristic that doesn't kind of fit into any of the other categories.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the example I was thinking of was that Tom's Shoe Company. You know, they make these little shoes. They're like little canvas, like almost like a slipper type of shoe, like a tiny little sneaker. But they donate a pair of shoes to a needy child
yeah.
somewhere in the world. If,
oh,
yeah.
Three
yeah.
times a pair of shoes, but the donations made another pair of shoes.
Right.
Yeah.
yeah, so it's a kind of a neat thing
yeah.
that
yeah.
differentiates them. So, okay. So, what next? You might want to differentiate your product on technology, too, if it's applicable. It's not always applicable, but something like flame grilled, you know, that's like different than other types of cooking. And that restaurant, Baja Fresh, that's the Mexican chain, they always have a sign that says no microwaves anywhere. Things like handmade is important. And Trace, we were talking about earlier, her jewelry is hand-blown glass, and it's all over her website. And I was looking at that earlier, and it really grabbed me because it's like it really kind of makes an impact when you realize all these things, every single thing you look at, it's all hand-blown glass, and like the amount of work and expertise that goes into that. I think it's really important for people to know that you're not just buying something that is going to be the same thing you can buy elsewhere. This was handmade by someone with a high degree of skill.
Mm-hmm.
So that can be important too, the technology. The components are important. If it's, you know, again, if it's important, which is what it's made of. So it might be things like all natural, recycled materials. And then sometimes you'll see like a greeting card that says printed on recycled paper with soy ink or 100% cotton.
And that's different than technology?
Oh, yes, I'm sorry. Technology was one thing.
Oh, and what was this?
Oh, the components, what it's made out of. Sorry about that. You know, I can go back and recap this, make sure everyone got everything when we're done. Anything else on components or ingredients?
I think they're not necessarily relevant to certain people that you may be targeting.
Do you have a specific example in mind, or is it?
Mm-hmm. Well, I just think it's important to bear in mind that people of certain demographics don't have the option of worrying about that sort of thing. So it depends
mm-hmm.
on what you're marketing.
Yeah. And it might not be important either. You know, it's like, if you make, if you pour cement for a living, people probably don't really care about the components of the cement. Like, it's just kind of cement, you know. But there might be other things where people care about that. So I think it's, yeah, you're right. It's important to think about, like, is that important to your customer? Like, does your customer care?
Exactly.
Or
yeah.
Locally sourced.
Locally sourced is good, yeah.
And there's certain words that used so often, they become like overused buzzwords.
Mm-hmm.
And when I'm writing stuff, I have keep a big thesaurus by me. I try to come up with words that are more
mm-hmm.
appealing and more unique.
Yeah, that's good too.
Yeah.
Okay. Then this is related to components, but it would be like the source of your materials and labor, and that's things like fair trade, sweatshop free, made in the U.S. You know, that might be important to your, might be important to your customers.
I think, yeah, the success of Walmart is a testament to that point.
Yeah, it's not always important to all customers.
On the other hand, they've now changed more than any other company,
mm-hmm.
and now they're actually using the fact that they're doing, they're the biggest provider of organic food in the world now. So,
which is good. This is
Walmart.
That's amazing.
And it's, I think it's fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But once they got that bad reputation, they have no other company in the world that has changed their reputation as much as Walmart has in the last 2 years.
Yeah, that's amazing. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So it's kind of interesting that they, oh, okay, let's rethink this. And that's now getting them more customers. It's like, they just like, oh, let's re-strategize it.
Mm-hmm.
Quite interesting.
Yeah, I guess what's interesting, too, is they were listening.
Yeah.
If that's what
yeah.
people are wanting, they listened and,
exactly.
you know.
Yeah. Matter of fact, they are doing refillable detergents, after I thought of it. And I think it's fantastic. It just makes it
yeah.
more accessible. More accessible. I think it's great.
Yeah, that's a good point, too, is that it might actually help you legitimize your business,
yeah.
the fact that someone else is doing it and you're not the only one. It's like, oh,
yeah.
there's, you know, a few companies
like
that do that.
You know, but it's like, oh, Walmart does it.
Yeah,
you
and
know.
You can kind of ride their advertising budget.
Have the same market, so,
yeah.
but it just makes it, I think it's free advertising, so I think, you know, but yeah.
The word organic is almost started to hit critical mass because it's been used so much. And some of the national organic standards are being compromised. They put food things that are not all that healthy. They get it passed by the Food and Drug, and it's being sort of co-opted.
Yeah.
It's sad. So I guess generally it's better.
So the final one I have, and then I'll recap, is you yourself might be part of the product. You know, it's like that artistic mystique, you know, that people, at least, you know, especially, like I said, as a non-artist, I'm fascinated by that, and I would love to know kind of, like, the details of how you make this happen and that kind of thing. And I had a coworker a long time ago that did beaded jewelry, so, you know, she strung fancy beads together and sold it at parties in people's houses, and she was Native American, and people really liked the fact that she was Native American. Like, she got a lot of interesting comments and questions, and people felt like her jewelry really reflected her heritage, even though it wasn't specifically what you might think of as traditional Native American. But it's sort of like she became part of that, and people really enjoyed the fact that she was Native American. So you yourself, and don't underestimate that lore to non-artists, because I can tell you it's powerful. Like, I'm fascinated by it. So I think, you know, it's great to toot your own horn in that way and talk about kind of your creativity and that kind of thing.
Inspiration.
Your inspirations, yeah.
Yeah. People like stories.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
In my one of my business cards, the other pendant I sell is called Flower of Life. It's 13 intertwining circles, and on the back of this business card, I write, this ancient symbol called the Flower of Life can be used as a metaphor to illustrate the interconnectedness of all life and the one spirit throughout the universe. And I think of what I do also as a platform to educate people, learn more about the oneness.
Mm-hmm.
And that sort of gives it more dimension.
Nice.
What about capitalizing on preconceived notions for the people that you're marketing to? For example, you said that about the Native American girl selling the jewelry, that people automatically assume she's more spiritual, she's deeper, and I can trust. There's a certain value to that. So if your name happens to be a Russian name and you're marketing something, you can use that. For example, you're talking about selling recycled goods. The Dutch have been doing that for
mm-hmm.
such a long time, and you are. And so,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
capitalizing
like
on
the, yeah, well, we, yeah,
the idea of you capitalizing on the fact that you happen to be Dutch, but you also are, and so, and there's so much experience connected with that country, and they have had such success.
They've been doing it for 40
years,
Yeah, I think that's great if that's something that, you know, is kind of a good fit. Like if I would totally use it. I would say, you know, hey, I'm Dutch, and this was my experience growing up, and I wanted to bring that to the U.S., and this is what I like about it, and that kind of thing, and sort of, yeah, tie it into your personal story. So it's, because I think it would be very different than, you know, someone just kind of coming in and sort of doing it without that. They're both great, but it's just a different thing, and, you know, I think that's
Well, of course, it's not applicable every time.
Right.
I'm just making a comment that when it is applicable, it's something that you could capitalize on.
Yeah. Like if
Lisa is coming from a family of musicians.
She does have a history of the
Mm-hmm.
There's two Italian restaurants side by side, and one is called Mama Leone's, and the person that greets me is Mama Leone. And the next one is Bob's.
No, Robert.
Great guy. And maybe
yeah.
Pasta, but there's some. I want.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Pasta,
If you, honestly, it would hurt you if you happen to be of a descent from something contrary in people's preconceived ideas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's. I think that's a really neat idea to, you know, if there's something about your background that ties into it, then, yeah, for sure.
If Mama's food wasn't good, you'd be going to Bob's.
The bottom line overall.
Yeah. So, I think that's it on this. I'm just going to go back and recap this and make sure everyone's got all of them, because there's 10. So we start with our broad model, and then there's 10 different ways you can differentiate it. Number one is, to whom do you sell? Number two is the price point. Number three is, how is it sold? Like Tupperware parties, direct selling, the mall, the web, Etsy, etc. How is it different from your competition? How is it delivered? And that includes the packaging, we mentioned that too. The technology, if it's applicable, and that's things like flame grilled or handmade or brick oven baked.
You really did say that about no microwave.
Yeah.
People are afraid to use microwave.
Mm-hmm. And it kind of gives you a different feel for the food. Like they don't, you know, you kind of picture them making it fresh rather than getting a bulk shipment and then pulling it out of the freezer and microwaving it when you order, you know?
Yeah.
So. Number seven is the components, which is what it's made out of. And number eight is the source of your materials and labor, and this was things like sweatshop free or made in the U.S., that kind of thing. And number nine is you might be part of the product, you yourself. And then finally, number 10 would be any other defining characteristics that don't fit into any of these categories. So that would be like the Tom's Shoes example. That's what makes them different. I think it would be kind of good to have someone to volunteer to be an example and kind of walk through these 10 real quick. Anybody want to do that?
Sure.
Okay.
Are you going to go through the name, or do you
Need
to go down the list?
Well, yeah. So we'll start with the broad. Like, what would the broad sort of one sentence business model be?
I prepare and deliver food to your event.
Okay.
Your house, your event, or wherever you want me to bring it.
Okay. And who do you sell to? And keep in mind, you might have like several different groups, but maybe we can start with just one sort of line of business.
I much at this point. I haven't narrowed it down to that.
Okay, well, is it, would you be looking to do, like, sort of Dom Perignon and caviar?
No, no, I'd be looking to do more of a kind of middle ground.
Middle ground.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Not high end, not too, not, I mean, I certainly wouldn't turn down anybody who had a lot of money, but I prefer to make it more available to people with maybe not as much money to
mm-hmm.
go around.
So you're looking at, yeah, people who have, like, things like graduation parties or,
yes.
like, a sit-down birthday party, those kinds
yes.
of things. Not necessarily, you know, the super wealthy, but you're looking at more than chips and dip, too.
Yes.
Okay. I think that's a pretty good start. And I, you, so you kind of covered to whom you're selling to, because it's sort of anybody in that middle ground that's having a party.
Mm-hmm.
Your price point is medium, so it's
mm-hmm.
not, you're not going for low, you're not going for high at this point for this particular example. You also kind of covered how it's sold, like you prepare it and bring it to their location.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And how is it different from your competition?
Well, at this point, some of my intentions are the quality of the food, the money, and the styling of the food. I plan on making a plate of macaroni and cheese look really amazing. Not just a foil tin with macaroni and cheese in it. So the styling, and also the actual service, the friendliness of the service.
Mm-hmm.
Not to say that's different necessarily than what other people do, but I intend to do it better. The difference would be really pack a lot for the dollar as far as the way it looks
mm-hmm.
and the attitudes of the people that bring it.
I think you hit on a few really good ones. One is that you're a lot of value for the dollar. And you were talking about the quality that you get for the dollar, so that's a really good one. The appearance, too, like as you were talking about that, I'm like, who, you know, I've seen those warming foil trays a million times. I've never seen anyone do anything creative or noteworthy with it. So I think that's a really good one, too. And the friendliness, you know, I think it's a really differentiating characteristic because typically when you go to like a catered event, the staff is so busy, like you don't really, it's not that they're bad, that you just don't usually get any sort of a friendly interaction. So I think that could be a really, you got three really good ones right there. You touched on how it's delivered. You know, you talked about like sort of the creativity and that kind of thing. So I think that's good. And you might come up with like signature things that you do, like a certain way you fold napkins or a certain way, you know, you do something with glasses or something.
Mm-hmm.
How about your technology? Anything defining about that?
Probably like the type of food, is it homemade mm-hmm. or gourmet or.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what type of technology is employed in its preparation and
mm-hmm.
and its containment until it's delivered, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I think
example,
that's good. Yeah.
Never frozen.
Mm-hmm.
All
no microwave.
All gas oven.
Mm-hmm.
Brick oven.
Mm-hmm. Brick oven. People love that. I could even picture, you know, if you wanted to get swanky, you could do like on the spot stir fries or grilled stuff on the spot, so that the technology almost becomes a part of the experience. That you know, like that, you know, like to make a Caesar salad at the table or like sort of a way of incorporating that. And you don't. It might not be something you get into right away. It's just we're sort of just tossing ideas out for how you might use technology to differentiate yourself.
Yeah, I think you hit it right there. It's something I haven't gotten into right away, but it's something as I'm developing it that I think those would certainly be important things to think
mm-hmm.
about as I'm developing that, setting aside from other places. Like, yeah, if there were Caesar salad on that I thought might be nice to serve, yes, maybe doing it tableside would really
mm-hmm.
make it that much
like
nicer.
Panache.
Catering with panache, love it.
Depending on what type of food you're serving, you have, like if you're doing French, you like the brandy on at or if you're doing Mexican, maybe you stir fry it. You know, so there's always something that can make it have a little panache.
I think that's great. I think that's that's one of those like brilliant, you know, ideas, you know, just the idea that everything you do has panache to it. You know, you don't just stick your mac and cheese in a foil thing and put it up on the warming table. It's like there's something jazzy about it, everything you do.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. And we're kind of putting you on the spot here, so I appreciate
great.
It, and you're doing great.
No, it's helping me.
Yeah, you're doing awesome. And then how about your components? Like, what is your food made of, or is there anything differentiating about what your food's made out of?
Well, I, at this point, like to think that I have options for people who can't just eat anything. So I would like, I might have a meatball sandwich, I don't know that I will, but let's say I would. But I might also have a vegan. I'd like to be able to cater, I'd like to be able to use organic foods. I'd like to be able to cater to, just in general, but I'd like to also be able to cater to people. In any crowd, there's somebody that can't eat meat, and there's someone that maybe is vegan, and I like them to be able to have a choice as well. So,
that's great. That's really terrific. And then, how about anything about your sourcing with your materials? Like, you know, you can maybe do things like farmer's market, or, you know, I go downtown at 3 a.m. to the produce mart or something.
Again, I guess it would depend somewhat on my menu, but this, I would love to support local, and I'd love to, for several different reasons. There may be some things that would be tougher to do that way.
You could maybe have your own homegrown herbs or something like that. It'd be very easy to incorporate.
Homemade tortillas.
That's good too.
That would take an investment on its own.
Or even if, you know, until you did your own, you could, if you had like something, I know there's like places in downtown LA where you can watch them make the tortillas, like just having something like that where there's just different, you know, something interesting about it. And then how could you incorporate your own self into the product?
At least to begin with, I would want to be on site at all events that I could be. I've worked in catering for a long time, and I am really comfortable with people. They seem comfortable with me. In fact, I just did an event for the place that I work for, and we were showing off, there were a bunch of caterers, and we were showing off to Boeing, actually, who we cater to anyway, but they had a bunch of people that are new hired, or new at what they do, and so we were showing off to them in case they wanted to use us or use another caterer, or use this caterer. And a lot of people came and talked to us for a little while, longer than they did at some of the other stops because of, I've just been doing it long enough that it's real easy for me to talk about, and I think I'm friendly enough, and people seem comfortable talking to me. And so it's really easy for me to present something to somebody. People seem to trust me, and I think that's important in anything. So at least to get us started, and then, you know, it's probably down the line, you know, that I would like to be able to be at all the events.
Even if to make an appearance, that might make people feel really special, that the head chef, you know, the owner shows up at their event and says, hey, how's everything going? Are you happy with the service? You know?
Yeah, there's a restaurant that I used to go to a lot. I knew the owner, and he was there every night. He walked around and talked to everybody just for a minute. Just said, hi, everybody. How's it going? And loved it.
Yeah, how much do people love that? Have you ever been in a restaurant and had the chef come out? Like, I just think that's, like, awesome when that happens. I mean, it's just, you feel so special, you know?
Mm-hmm. I know a guy who has a restaurant. He had a restaurant, he's a French guy, and he has a restaurant in Rancho Cucamonga. And it was good, but disastrous, because for a lot of people, he opened a new restaurant now in Oakland. He's a very unpleasant person. He's completely unfriendly to everyone. And it's not going to
be. Business is a failure?
It's weird. I mean, he'll the room that doesn't come and say hello, doesn't, nothing. It's bizarre.
You know, it's kind of interesting, too, because, you know, at first pass, it seems like a restaurant's about food. Like, you know, who cares if this guy is not friendly? But it's really not. Like, that's kind of what we're getting. You know, it's like...
I've been in a crowded table and had them actually be a little perturbed, knowing that he was there and he didn't have the courtesy to come over and say hello and schmooze. People want that.
Yeah.
I think a restaurant's about the experience.
Like, yeah, because other... Yeah.
Part of that.
Yeah. That's a good point, too, is that to consider the whole experience. It's like if you really just want to get fed, you'd stay home and, you know, just eat a sandwich, you know. It's like really about more than that.
So is that a good thing for solopreneurs to think about the experience that they're kind of, their marketing and packaging or something that along with being different?
Definitely, yeah. Mm-hmm. If there's a way to incorporate something that is more of a, that makes it more of a memorable experience. Wouldn't always apply, but, you know, I think it's, you know, if it does apply, I think it's a good thing to do.
Well, and I think that anyone who has a business is going to have to sell themselves at some point. Even if you're like, I'm selling this product, I'm never going to, it's going to be on shelves in stores. At some point, you're going to be face-to-face with someone and have to sell yourself. To
even the store buyer.
And people talk.
Yeah. Yeah.
People in every industry, they talk. I hear all kinds of gossip about people that I have nothing to do with. And they say bad stories. If something bad happens, it gets out there.
Mm-hmm. So awesome. Thank you very much. That was a great example. And I give you tons of credit for, you know, jumping right in and doing it. Good for you. So any other comments on the business model?
Is that four again?
Oh, it's just to give you a good way to sort of design and lay out kind of what your business does to make money.
Mm-hmm.
Both in the broad sense and sort of to help you think about how it's different from other people that do the same thing, you know.
And does it fit into your business plan?
Yes, actually. That was our very next thing.
Okay.
I was just trying to gauge the time and see if there's any questions. I want to do one more section, and that's the business plan, and then go to break. Is everyone good with that, or should we go to break now?
No, let's do
okay. It will kind of put us at a really good stopping point at that point. So, all right, so the model helps you figure out kind of where you are now, and it also gives you a way to frame where you want to be. You know, you've got a way to describe, you know, these are all the characteristics of what you sell, and where you want to be might be a totally new product, or it might be selling your existing product in a new way. The business plan is kind of what gets you from the model you have now to the model you want. And again, that's the... We're using that for this purpose tonight. A business plan you do for another purpose might be, like for a bank or something, might be really different.
What do you mean the one you want? Based upon reality or what you want to change?
No, it's a good question. Like right now, if you have a business, you know, you probably want to do better next year. You might want more sales, or you might want to be in more geographic areas. I mean, kind of ultimately, we all want more sales most of the time. And we need to think about how to get there. Like, are you going to sell more to, are you going to continue in this, just making the exact same thing that you're doing, but try and sell more of them? Or are you going to make a different product and try and sell that as well as your first product, or that kind of thing?
Or expand that kind of thing.
Right, or expand to a new geography,
your
that
goals,
kind of thing. Right.
Defining your goals is probably pretty important.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, yeah, once we start with our business model of where we are right now, you can use that same process to talk about where you would want to be in a year from now, or 2 years from now, or 6 months from now, or something like that. It's a way to help you figure out, you know, now, you know, what I have and what I want. And then the plan is what gets you to that new place. And usually your business plan will be for a specific period, and we'll use a year for this example, but you could do it for 6 months or 5 years or, you know, any other period that... If you're doing really big things, you might need a longer plan because it might not be able to happen in a year. So you might want to, you know, sometimes people just want to stay exactly the same, and the plan is just to, I'm going to do exactly what I did last year. Everything was great. It was perfect. Or you might want to grow in size, or you might want to grow in sales, or you might want to expand in other ways. And changing just one of these 10 characteristics can kind of make your product brand new. You know, if you you know, maybe package it in a way that appeals to a bargain shopper, like maybe you put 10 together and give it a discounted price, that kind of thing. That's kind of almost a brand new product in a way, because it's not going to appeal to the same person that wants a premium product. An example is, you know, Coca-Cola still sells Coke in glass bottles because some people like to consume it that way. It's the same exact Coke, it's just that some people like glass bottles for one reason or another. But it's really for those people, it's actually a different product. So you can kind of just change one thing about your product and actually have a new thing for people to buy. So as far as growth, we want to talk about a broad statement of how you want your model to look. So for example, you could be keeping the same business model but just doing more sales, or you could be adding new lines, or you could be selling more to your existing customers. Like for example, doing these things where you might package 10 items together and sell it at a discounted price, that means, you know, that person's probably already was going to be a customer, but now you're kind of upselling them into a different package. So once you have an idea of how you want to grow this year, then it can be kind of broken down into projects and then down into like individual tasks that are going to take you further and further toward that goal. So does anybody have growth ideas for this year?
Yeah. I want to focus more on web sales rather than shows. Mm-hmm. I also have a new product, actually.
Oh, okay.
Showcased, yeah.
That's neat. Okay, perfect example. So right now her sales occur both at shows where she goes in person and on the web, and she wants to grow the web portion of that. And you're already working on your first project to help you with that. What, do you want to share that?
I'm doing a course right now on SEOs, which is search engine optimization, the keywords to try and get up the Google search engines, basically, so get on page one where I should be.
Mm-hmm.
If people put in a certain thing, like right now I'm on page one, if you put in hand-blown glass jewelry, I just achieved that a few months ago. And I got great sales over Christmas because of that. But I'd like to be on page one if you just put in glass jewelry, which of course a lot more people search for than hand-blown glass jewelry. The figures are actually 1,000 people search for hand-blown glass jewelry, or a month, or 50,000 search for glass jewelry.
What's your domain name?
The Karma Culture.
With a K. K on Karma and K on Culture.
Culture, yeah. Which might be another thing to change.
Exactly what you do. There's a guy I know that, another musician, started a website selling vintage Western wear. He got the name.
Mm-hmm.
He just went off.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know, because I don't even have glass
jewelry. Just say what it is. Yeah. When I go to the net to look for something, I put in what it is. You know,
mm-hmm.
I Google what it is.
Yeah.
What did you call that search engine? What?
Optimizing.
Yeah, there's a whole like art and science around getting your website to be up top in the Google searching. But the reason this is a great example is because, okay, so she's defined her business model of hand-blown glass, where it is today, it's hand-blown glass jewelry sold mostly at shows and somewhat on the web. And where she wants to be is hand-blown glass jewelry sold mainly on the web and a little bit at shows. So, you know, she's talking about where she is now, where she wants to be. The steps in between, she's already taken the first one, which is to do this search engine optimization, which is going to get more visitors onto her site, and thereby, if nothing else changes, she'll sell more.
Mm-hmm.
So,
okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So. Right. So she's already got kind of the first project to get her toward that goal of selling more from her website. Another way to increase your sales would be to increase your conversion rate, increase the number of people who buy based on your traffic.
Yep.
And that would be like a whole other, you know, probably have to do with like optimizing your website. And I'm not an expert on that, but there are people who are.
Yeah. Well, I'd like to have better photographs
mm-hmm.
and, you know, revamping the site that hasn't been changed in
mm-hmm.
you know, 5 years or whatever. And also links, you know,
mm-hmm.
another site.
Right. So does that make sense? It's like a kind of like a perfect example that just kind of got, you know, fit in perfectly for tonight. You know, starting with where she is and going to where she wants to be, which is more web sales, and the first step to doing that would be to get more people looking at your website. So she's doing that by doing the search engine optimization and getting herself up higher in the Google rankings so that more people are going to get their eyes on that site.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
I have a question for you, actually. Are you learning to do that on your own, or are you paying
no,
someone to do that?
I'm doing an online SMC course.
Are you doing a course?
Yes. Santa College, it's an online thing.
Oh, Santa Monica College offers it.
Yeah.
I have one more thing to add to that, because I'm working with someone who's doing a new jewelry website.
Oh.
And they're working with Magenta, have you heard of that?
No.
It's a e-commerce, it's like a shop, but there's a, like, the shop programs like that, they have SEO kind of built into them.
Oh.
And also, like you were saying, return rate, like you could send out a newsletter and it will, based on the clicks and what people buy, it'll tell you like your return on newsletters and stuff like that.
Oh, that's great. Is it Magenta with a J or a G?
I think it's a G.
For you, it's actually called Ed2Go. E-D and then the letter 2, G-O.
Thank you.
I think it's .com, but it's part of SMC. It's kind of like an affiliate with SMC.
Okay, who else has a growth goal for this year? Go ahead.
Make more money. Yeah, I mean, right now I'm barely making any money at what I do. I worked for a company for a long time, and so I didn't have to do any sales, and now I'm freelance, so I have to find my clients. Right now I'm just doing like films, but they don't really have much of a music budget, or actually they don't have any music budget, which
mm-hmm.
means I can't really take a percentage of that for my fee, which is kind of normally how people do it.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to find the people who have the music budget.
Mm-hmm. And that's great, actually, just now that you started with like a very general thing, make more money, which is great, but to get specific like that, like, so then you got even more specific, I need more clients,
mm-hmm.
but it's not just any clients, you need clients with a music budget from which you can take a percentage. So that's great, I mean, that's a really awesome example of starting with something really specific and doable. Like, now you've got something to go for, like, now you know exactly who you need to get in front of, and then you know you need to get in front of more of them. Where might you find these people? Do you have a sense of that? Oh, okay. So that's
no,
a sticky wicket.
I used to work mainly on commercials,